You're listening to Inside North Central Massachusetts, powered by the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us on this next Chamber live chat with the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce. Travis Condon here, and I'm happy to be joined by a full house of individuals from Fitchburg today. We're joined by Fitchburg Mayor Stephen DiNatale, along with the Director of Economic Development, Mary Jo Bohart, Tom Skoroski, the Executive Director of Community Development, and Steve Curry, the City's Health Director. All of you, thank you for being here. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Now, yesterday, for the first time, the new old City Hall was reopened to the public. Mr. Mayor, I was wondering if you could tell us, you know, how it feels to finally allow residents inside now that construction's complete.
Yeah, obviously it's something that we've been driving toward. I kept going down and asking, how busy has it been? And I think the word still has to percolate through the community that they can come into the building. So, but you know, they come in masked and they're greeted by a greeter and directed to whatever they need to carry out their business. So working well,
and that's excellent.
I think the longer we get into that process, the more people are going to be aware of it, more comfortable, and there'll be more business being taken up.
And so now people will be able to come in, do their business directly. Of course, they will need to have masks on. What else can they expect when they come in and experience City Hall for the first time?
Well, hopefully they're impressed by the building itself. I mean, it's really a terrific transformation of what we all know what it looked like before, or have you seen in some of the videos that we've done, and the fact that it's you know, what we kind of branded as a City Hall for all, mm-hmm. And that's the message we want to make sure that we get out there. And again, not just for the employees, certainly the improvements in terms of working conditions are astronomical compared to what they used to be. But it's also very much geared toward being user-friendly for citizens of the city of Fitchburg to carry out their business, the business of government. So that's what we're hoping they take away from this.
Travis, one thing that I observed when I was walking through the first level and I saw several visitors queuing up at the concierge desk or the greeter desk to get guidance and so on, is just there's a place to stand, there are places to sit, and there are small meeting rooms where they could, if a private conversation needed to be had with a city staff person, there's a place to have it. And you can imagine a variety of different city departments where when a citizen comes in, they want to speak one-on-one away from mm-hmm. everybody else, and now they can do that.
That's excellent. And for those, by the way, who are just joining us, just a reminder, if you do have any questions for our panel here today from Fitchburg, you can submit your questions in the question box of the GoToWebinar. While we're talking about this building, this new City Hall, there's a great news that came out yesterday evening that the Preservation Massachusetts announced that the recently renovated City Hall is a 2021 Preservation Award recipient for the Paula Nicky Songus Award. And on top of that, I understand City Hall has also been nominated for the People's Preservation Choice Awards. Can you tell us about that designation?
Yeah, I just met myself. I'm joined, by the way, Patrick Hare, my chief of staff, is with me as well. We had a meeting yesterday with Mary Delaney, who has been just integral in getting this put together, and we thank Pam Beasley. Is her name Beasley? Yeah, it's Beasley. Pam Beasley from Bond. She was critical in getting us the recognition we so much deserve. Apparently we were on Mary Jo, you probably know this. Was an endangered historic building. We were on some kind of a. This is maybe 10 years ago when we closed the building up to, you know, because of the roof thrust.
You know, so what I didn't know is there was almost like a watch list. Whenever a historic building of significance is empty, I guess they get concerned. Right. Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, the 2012 Preservation Mass most endangered buildings after the roof trusses collapsed and everything. Yeah. So you made a commitment. I think the award speaks for itself, but you know, the team at Colliers, ICON, and you know, most importantly, the city staff that saw this through to the finish. It's an impressive end product. We're excited to show it to the public.
Absolutely. And in addition to the reopening of City Hall, I understand there is a plan, or you're working on finalizing plans to reopen additional municipal buildings. Can you tell us about that plan?
Yeah, we're looking at early May, first week or two in May, where we're hoping we can completely open up in places like the senior center, library. Library is kind of moving in that direction anyway. What else, Pat? I mean, senior center, library. What else? Yeah, I guess that's primarily, you know, the schools were already doing the hybrid model, so that seems to be working well too. So I think slowly and deliberately we're coming out of this, and knock on wood, hopefully with the warmer months coming up, we can be a little more flexible with events. And I know you're going to have other questions beyond this that are going to touch on that. So,
and while we're on the subject of the schools, I know that they've been reopened now. We are seeing more kids back in the classroom. And Steve, you might be able to speak to this as well. Are we going to be able to have some kind of a graduation ceremony with the state's protocols that are in place right now?
Well, the state is working on guidelines, but there are some graduation possibilities this year that are much better than the options for next year. So it looks a little better for our seniors this year.
That's excellent. And while we're talking about the new City Hall, one of the other things that's new, if you enter the downtown area, is the legislative building. Of course, that was a different purpose before. It's been used for voting in the past, but now it is the new legislative, the new chambers for the city council. While that's not going to be open to the public, I know the city council is going to be meeting out of there. Do we think that we'll continue to see that virtual option that we have for the public meetings in terms of, even after the pandemic's over, are we going to have the ability to Zoom in or call in and participate like folks have during the pandemic for those that physically can't be at city council meetings?
I think you're going to see, Trav, I think you're going to see that is going to become the new normal. I mean, where there'll be additional advancements in all these different platforms, like what is it we're on? What is this? WebEx, Zoom. You're gonna see much more sophistication in all this, because I think people have found that not only is it does it play to the concerns, the medical concerns that exist, but it's also cost effective for some of these larger corporations where they don't need the space anymore. They, you know, they're everyone's working from home for the most part. Me, I'm not sure I'm thrilled about that, but I think it's the future reality, if you will. So, yeah, I think that's always going to be the part. The building itself is, I really want to be able to open it up to the public to have them see that. And we're moving in that direction, but it's a terrific space. I mean, it's large gathering space. It's going to be, we're already working up plans for other boards and commissions to participate in there. It's just a very pleasing space. It's a beautiful building, and I'm ever thankful to Bank of America for gifting it to the city.
We do have an audience question that's come in. They're asking, now that we're moved over to the City Hall location, what's going to happen to the old City Hall building where operations were set up over the past, more than a decade or so?
Well, that's a Redevelopment Authority property. And they're, Mary Jo, you might know something, that they've got someone in line, don't they, that's going to be moving in there?
I don't imagine that it will be a singular someone. There's multiple inquiries for portions of the space. Keep in mind, finding a single user to take the whole space. It could happen, but typically what happens is a number of parties want to subdivide and have a portion. So the Redevelopment Authority has been entertaining those inquiries, and it's a great location because it's in the downtown, it's got parking, it's transit oriented. So for lots of reasons, and it was fitted out as office. So it's not raw space in that regard. So stay tuned. But I think you're going to see a mixture of uses. That's what it looks like will ultimately happen.
And Steve, I want to bring you into the conversation as well, Steve Curry. Canvassers are working right now with DPH to go door to door to help spread COVID-19 vaccine awareness in the city. Can you tell us a little bit more about this initiative that started at the beginning of the week?
Sure, it pretty much sprung on me at the last minute.
Sprung on all of us.
Yeah. They let me know Friday evening at about 8 p.m., so I did not see the emails, but they're going door-to-door, and this is an initiative to get or try and reduce the vaccine hesitation with our people of color and let them know information about the vaccine, the safety of it. And they're also armed with information on how they can get a shot and where they can go to do so. So it's kind of a good initiative because, of course, most of our cases are people of color. So, you know, reducing those cases is definitely a plus for the city.
And in your conversations that you've had with community leaders and other members of the community, are you finding that there is a lot of hesitancy, that people are nervous to take this vaccine, or that they have concerns or worries surrounding it?
Not a lot. I mean, it's a small number right now, but I'm sure once we get deeper into the vaccination process, those folks will pop up and be a little bit more noticeable once more people are vaccinated.
And have you talked to DPH yet to see what the reception's been like to these door-to-door greeters or information givers, if you will?
No, I have had no feedback with them as of yet, but that would definitely be interesting to know what the results of that canvassing is.
And now that the eligibility is expanding, I know some folks are still wondering, will we see a clinic come to Fitchburg on a more wide-scale level? I know there's been talk of using Kmart or different locations. Is there still an attempt to get a bigger vaccine clinic in the Fitchburg area?
There is. In fact, I did get access to the building at the old Kmart yesterday. We will begin to start taking steps to clean the building up and turning things on. The building has been vacant for 4 years, so we'll have to do a little bit of updating. I'm sure the plumbing and electrical is going to have some issues. So we might be a week or two away, but that is the ultimate plan. There will also be a stop the spread site at the Kmart site, which will offer testing 3 to 4 days a week. So it's going to be a vaccination site as well as a testing site.
And you mentioned that stop the spread testing site. I know Fitchburg was one of the communities that was going to be given extra resources to combat COVID-19 spread. Is that part of that initiative?
It is, yes.
And looking at activities in Fitchburg, we're starting to see some activities. I know the Stratton Players found a unique way to do kind of a smaller performance outside, where they had a few actors taking on the roles of some historical figures. We're seeing movement at the library, movement now at the Fitchburg Art Museum to expand what they've got going on. Are any of you hopeful that we could see some more activities in Fitchburg later on this summer involving Mill Street and maybe Riverfront Park?
Yes,
I think the vaccination numbers will definitely increase.
Yep,
which will help.
I was a audience goer at the event at the Forest Hill Cemetery, and my tip of the hat to Sally Cragen. She's just crazy for the arts and does just an outstanding job. Not to mention most of the folks I know, because I've kind of dabbled in that world myself. So it was great seeing them. A little chilly that day, but you're at the top of the hill at Forest Hill, and it's a little breezy, and it was pretty cold. But there's going to be an encore performance, and I asked Sally, I said, yeah, let's do that when it gets a little warmer. You know, it would be be terrific. But it was well done. They put a lot of time into it, and it was really kind of neat. I didn't know H.M. Francis is buried at Forest Hill Cemetery.
Wow.
And he is, he's the city's architect, basically. I mean, a number of the buildings in the city, more prominent, more stately buildings, were his creation. So I didn't know that his, he's interred at Forest Hill Cemetery. And it just, once again, I mean, the city's history is just marvelous beyond compare. So I learned a lot about people that I had always heard of, but not really getting anything in depth. So it was really informative. It was a great, they put together a great presentation. We appreciate it.
Now, I know you've done some acting in the past in local community theater productions. So will you be auditioning for H.M. Francis for the spring encore?
you know, Sally keeps asking me, what happened to you? How come you didn't? I said, nah, but I got a couple of things on my plate. And so I couldn't make it, but I was very impressed. I mean, they put a lot of time into it. My understanding was they were going there on, I think at least two or three times a week to rehearse and whatnot. And I mean, it happened pretty quickly, and for them to have the command of the characters that they did, that's impressive. It's not easy.
I think what's great about Fitchburg is, you know, you have the theater going on over at the college. You've got Mount Wachusett has its own theater program just down the road, but you've got two local community theater groups. Now, Fitchburg has some communities don't have any, but you've got two. And I think that's always one of the big concerns is after this pandemic, are we going to see a return of that arts community? And we already are.
Well, we have to. I mean, we're committed to that. I mean, that's really our brand, arts and culture, and we're going to keep driving in that direction. That's what we're all about. So we're going to focus on that. We're going to improve on it and exploit it in a good way.
Now, in addition to the City Hall construction, I know there was a lot of work that was being done at the Fitchburg Municipal Airport. We saw the runway expansion, the self-serve fuel station. Can you tell us what else is in the pipeline for expansion at the airport?
Yeah, there's continuous talk and discussion on a solar array in the unused section of the runway. And also, there's a real, real strong desire to add hangars to the property. And we're moving in that direction. And really kind of back of the envelope numbers on, I think what's the one thing that's really missing that I'd like to do before, you know, I'm in the nursing home is putting a restaurant at the airport, getting a restaurant back. I think that's the one last piece I think that will really make it a destination, because it is now with the extended runway, which accommodates a small jet traffic. There's a definite economic benefit to the not just Fitchburg, to the region, to the entire region. So we really do have. I think you may have seen the article in the Sentinel. They did a great piece interviewing Peter Kettle, the best airport manager the city has seen in the last 30 years, head and shoulders above anybody else. And so the newspaper really touched upon all the good things that are happening, and Peter Kettle, along with the Airport Commission. It's a great group of individuals, and they're getting it done. And we're going to continue in that direction. Airport's never been in better shape. Matter of fact, right now, for the first time in a number of years, it's fiscally in the black. So that's quite an accomplishment in and of itself. So we're just moving in that direction. We want to, it's kind of like an enterprise fund. So we want them to be self-sustaining and even have a little bit of extra to do some of the, you know, amenity things that would even attract more people to the airport. So it's a lot of good things happening there.
And you mentioned it being in the black right now. I don't think people realize just what an economic driver the airport is for the city, and how, you know, much of a draw that is for potential businesses that come to the region.
That's right. you've got, and again, it's regional. So you know, the business may not be in Fitchburg, but they will utilize that airport because it makes sense on the bottom line for them. I mean, we're working with Amazon. I'm sure they, you think Amazon has planes, Tom?
I think they probably got a few.
Probably got a couple, right? Yeah. So that, again, it's, you know, when they need to get their corporate guys flying around, they'll use the municipal airport. And the feds are using the airport to fly in kind of a low-key thing, but prisoners from other parts of the country that come into Devens, and they're using, and that's because through the efforts of Peter Kettle, reached out to them, they were going to Hanscom. Pittsburgh Municipal Airport is much closer to Devens than Hanscom is.
Yeah.
And so now they're flying in here. Good stuff.
Travis, one thing that the listeners may not realize is that when the new runway was built and extended, the abandonment of the other cross runway generated some land available. Some will become a solar array, but some of it is industrially zoned. And as the mayor was explaining, you know, hangars and other supporting industrial use, it opens up a tract of about 25 acres of industrially zoned land that's flat. And that's not something we have a lot of in Fitchburg. And so it's an opportunity for the airport to really make the most of this repurposing of that land. And they're in the process right now of an airport master plan process. So that's what they're up to.
And you mentioned the expansion of the runway. I know that has really opened up the possibilities, because beforehand, corporate jets of a certain size couldn't land there for insurance purposes. So since the runway has now opened, have you seen or talked to Peter just to find out about an increase in traffic that's come in already?
Much more. He sends us pictures of these jets, and he's such a pilot freak. He knows the names of these. That is a XYZ turbo, you know, whatever. And it's like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I love it because they buy jet fuel. Thank you.
Yes. And right. Also the 24-hour access to fueling. It's a self-serve kind of a situation.
Right.
Now, very modern. So that's a source of revenue. You know, when people need fuel and they can get it at, you know, whatever hour, and it doesn't need to have a staff person there to pump it for them, that is great. And so the airport has done that investment of getting themselves modernized.
You know, and I thanks to the Lieutenant Governor, the Baker-Polito administration also, there, she had a great deal to do with that self-serve fuel farm. And certainly, we, you know, that makes a huge difference in the airport, as Mary Jo mentioned. You know, you had to hire somebody, and it was, you know, they can't be there 24 hours. This is available to, you know, people with jets or any fuel need at any time of the day or night. So, and we've gone to a credit card system, that kind of thing, I think.
I believe that's how it's handled now. I'm not quite sure, but it's, you know, it's remote in that it doesn't need staff there. And so what Peter Kettle has mentioned in the airport commission is they've seen quite an uptick in the sale of fuel, which is yet again, another source of revenue for the airport.
And to a great extent, that's why we're in the black. I mean, because we're attracting more aircraft, but we're also selling more fuel.
And I know we're going to get to Amazon later on, but as we talk about, you know, attracting businesses to Fitchburg, is that now something that you can kind of throw out as a marketing tool to say, hey, we've got an airport, we can get your executives in and get them out?
It has been. Even prior to the runway extension, I can think of two, and I'm sure there were more than two, but when Great Wolf was coming into being and they were flying in people from their headquarters, which is out of state, when UTS was purchasing Wachusett Chip and they were flying their corporate leaders in during that transaction and so on, those are just two examples. So the fact that we have a regionally significant airport that can accommodate those types of jets is going to continue to be a selling point when we are attracting other new businesses to come to Fitchburg.
And I want to talk a little bit about the downtown area, because I understand the downtown transformation project to turn Main Street into two-way traffic, and also see some improvements around the Upper Common is heading out to bid. How long is this process now going to be open?
Right. So pretty exciting news. Been a long time coming, to be sure. Almost a year in the design process. So, you know, these projects are complicated. They take time. But, you know, we are now officially out to bid. The bid period closes on the 6th of May. We've got a pre-bid meeting with any interested bidders tomorrow at 10 o'clock in front of City Hall. So we are moving full steam ahead and, you know, excited to see this project come to fruition soon. You know, one of the great things about having a window to Boulder Drive is you can kind of see all the action behind you. And as the mayor was speaking before, I saw a couple bicyclists biking by. I thought, hey, they're going to have a bike lane soon, so they can do that a little more safely. But, you know, the project, once we get up and going, you know, we'll be developing a schedule with the construction firm we'll be working with. But the goal is to be substantially complete by the end of the year, and then wrapping up sort of punch list items and finalizing the project in about June of 2022, where we'll, you know, be all finalized and everything will be kind of polished and ready to go. So we're excited to see that through and excited to be moving towards the finish line there.
And so you mentioned there's going to be two-way main. We're going to see a bike lane. What else are we going to be seeing for improvements to the downtown Fitchburg area and the Upper Common?
So there'll be a couple key improvements in the western intersection, sort of just in front of the Upper Common will be one key sort of configuration change that will allow for traffic. Basically, if you're coming eastbound from the Upper Common to downtown, you can decide if you want to take Boulder Drive or Main Street. It'll be kind of an equal opportunity decision. And then there's going to be two important new signalization upgrades at Main and Putnam and at Boulder and Putnam. And then on the eastern edge, right past the Water Street Bridge, there'll be another major change that you know, one of the important things that it'll allow for, you know, aside from cars going westbound on Main, we'll actually be able to turn left on Boulder and head west if they'd like. But if you're also on the Water Street Bridge, you can actually just take a right-hand turn and swing right around and head westbound on Boulder if you so choose. So it's really about giving drivers options in that respect. You know, we're also going to have crosswalk and sidewalk improvements to make it friendlier for the pedestrian. And then Boulder Drive will have some bike lane accommodations that will also act as a bit of a buffer lane if vehicles do need to pull over to the side for emergency vehicles to get through in the event of emergency. So we tried to accommodate, you know, cars, bikes, and pedestrians throughout this project.
So this wasn't just kind of returning it to how it used to be when it was two main, but it was really kind of redesigning it to make it more accessible for everybody with this two-way.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a complete redesign.
While we're on the subject of downtown, last week, Secretary of Housing and Economic Development Mike Keneally, Undersecretary Ashley Stolba, and President of Mass Development Dan Rivera toured downtown. Can you tell us a little bit about this visit and what it meant for the city to host these three big officials from Boston?
Sure. It was really exciting. The impetus of the visit was the award of what's known as an Urban Agenda grant, which is a yearly grant through the Executive Office of Housing and Economic Development. Fitchburg actually received one. I know Leominster did as well, and the chamber was a recipient of that one. But the goal of the Fitchburg Urban Agenda grant award is to increase access and entrepreneurship among communities of color, and particularly in the downtown. It was a joint grant award between the Chamber and Newview Communities and Reimagine North of Maine to really help support small business development in the downtown area. So it's a pretty exciting grant award, but it was also an opportunity to get folks from the state to come in and tour downtown, see the work we're doing in the TDI district, both currently and in the future. And, you know, ultimately, Dan Rivera, you know, coming from Lawrence as the former mayor there, moving to his new role in mass development just within the last month or two, and Ashley Stolba, the Undersecretary of Community Development, you know, for both of them, it was their first time really getting on the ground in Fitchburg, seeing the work we're doing. So it was a great opportunity, not just to talk about this grant award, but to queue up, you know, hopefully future opportunities, whether it's MassWorks projects or different grant programs that invest in some of our underutilized properties downtown, and also just thinking about, you know, pipeline projects in the TDI district. It's always good to have the state support. The Commonwealth has been really supportive of all the work we're doing downtown, but you know, always a good opportunity to highlight new things happening.
Well, and I think it's one thing too, when they see it on paper, but to actually come out and put their, you know, put their boots on the ground, as you say, to come out and actually see the work that's happening, that must mean a lot in terms of advocacy for these other resource projects that you're mentioning.
Absolutely. And, you know, it wasn't just seeing the projects on the ground, but it was seeing the people too. I think for all of us that were there on the tour, including the state officials, it was the, you know, in a safe, socially distant, masked way, following all the guidelines, et cetera. It was the most people I think any of us had seen together in an outdoor environment for quite some time. And I think the state was pretty impressed by that. But I think it's a really just clear way to show the strength of the partnerships we've built, you know, between the Chamber, New View, Fitchburg State, Reimagine North of Maine, the Art Museum. You know, everything we do downtown is, you know, we're stronger doing it together. And, you know, I know that was one of the things we highlighted in that walking tour is, you know, for example, we've got some small business grants going out the door to help support businesses with losses due to COVID. And they've been extremely impactful. And we'll talk a little bit, I'm sure, about the third round of funding we've got available. But I think we've had, you know, a little north of $200,000 that the city's been able to put out the door, you know, in the last year, which is fantastic. But taken together with the resources of the Chamber 0% Interest Emergency Loan Program, taken together with TDI's grant program, and of course, New View Small Business TA, where they're able to help small businesses unlock PPP loans, EIDL loans, and grants through the Mass Growth Capital grant program, you know, we're able to take those dollars, which are significant, you know, but really leverage them into something much larger. So I think, you know, we turned $250,000 into $1.8 million when you bring all the partners to the table. So I think as much as the capital projects and everything happening on the ground was a big piece of the story we were telling, it was also about how our impact is so much more significant when we're doing it together.
And in talking about that walking tour, where did you stop last week?
Great question. So we started at Mill Street, and you know, it's always kind of a good stage to start things off at. And you know, we had strong style coffee there. Kim Jones, the owner, provided coffee for everybody, and it was a nice just moment to kind of sit back and appreciate all the progress we've made. But then, you know, the first step along the way was actually going to Elmer Melendez's new restaurant, which hopefully will be open in just a few short weeks, Tacos Tequila Mexican Cocina, right at 310 Main Street. So Elmer, you know, at Mill Street kind of told us a little bit about his vision for the downtown, which if you've ever heard him talk about it, and if you haven't, it's enough to really get everyone motivated and excited about the future post-COVID. But, you know, Elmer is, you know, not just at Tacos Tequila, but at Dario's on Main Street. He's opening up a restaurant in Devens. It's pretty incredible to see what he's been able to do growing from one restaurant, or, you know, one in River Street, one in Lunenburg, to really expanding his offerings. But then we actually walked inside Tacos Tequila, got a look at the work they're doing to repurpose that space. And I think it's going to be really exciting and a great new amenity for downtown Fitchburg. And then we just kind of walked throughout the downtown, stopping at a few other small businesses along the way that we've supported through the partnership. We stopped at El Bohio, and the owner there, Manny, was able to tell us a little bit about his story and building that restaurant into the thriving downtown amenity that it is today. And then we headed over to Beyond, the Greek restaurant there on Main Street, and heard a little bit from Gregor Labavides about the work that they're doing, and the supports that they've received from New View and the city's revolving loan program, the Chamber's loan program through the North Central Development Corporation, and Secretary Keneally bought a lot of pastries, a lot of baklava along the way. Baklava for everybody. Yeah. And then we moved along and actually ended at the legislative building. And it was a really great opportunity to highlight, you know, like I said before, this is really the city putting a stake in the ground and, you know, not just talking the talk, but walking the walk, that, you know, everything we're trying to build towards with downtown revitalization work, you know, we can't tell people to invest in their properties if we're not investing in it ourselves. So we talked a lot about the market signals we are trying to send there. And, you know, overall, I think it was a great tour, and hopefully it gave them just a glimpse of what we're doing. And oh, I left out the most important part.
Yeah.
We walked over and checked out the theater as well. And there's nothing more inspiring or, you know, exciting than walking through that old vaudeville era theater and really hearing from President Lapidus and Jay Bry and the team at the university to really get a sense of what the vision is there, both in the theater and the Idea Lab and the commercial storefronts.
Yeah, theater is something that's been in talks for a while, and now to actually see pieces are moving, I actually got to see a few pictures from inside there, and it's incredible to just kind of know what's going to be happening with that transformation. For listeners who might not be as familiar with that project, what is that theater going to be transformed into?
Yeah, so, you know, originally, I think it was about a 1,400-seat vaudeville-era theater, you know, with, I think, 7 to 8 commercial storefronts. And then the second floor was kind of an office space. And as many of you likely know, the second floor has already been renovated into the Idea Lab, which is a video game design center for the university's video game design program, and also an entrepreneurial space working with Newview Communities. Ray Blanger, Jackie Mastrangelo, and their team are actually, their offices are at the Idea Lab, and it's an opportunity to bring businesses in, to get technical assistance, to build out business plans and so forth. But the next step for the university at that building is really twofold. So they want to get a black box theater, which will be a new construction next to the vacant lot beside the existing theater. And the Black Box Theater will be kind of a smaller scale theater for their performing arts program that will really be activated on a daily basis with students through that program. And then they'll be working on the storefronts on the first floor. So I think, again, today we have 7 to 8 storefronts. I think that footprint is going to shrink slightly. Some of that property is going to get taken into the broader design of the theater and the lobby. And then we'll probably end up with maybe 2 to 3 commercial storefronts. So the storefront development and the Black Box Theater are really the next phase, and hopefully we'll see that up and running very soon. And then the final phase will be the theater itself, which I think it's going to be a 1,200-seat theater. And, you know, they'll be developing a parking lot beside it that'll look kind of like a parking deck, like what we see on Mill Street, where there's 2 decks of parking. And, you know, that's a few years down the line still, but really is going to be the most critical piece of the puzzle of what we're trying to build with our arts and culture district downtown.
Now, you had mentioned that the city is going to be providing a third round of assistance to businesses that have been affected by the pandemic. Are you finding that that need is just as great as it was for your previous 2 rounds, or are we starting to see that need dip down a bit?
It has
dipped down a bit. But now what we're doing is additional outreach and really kind of figuring out, you know, what the needs are that still remain. We're not deluded into thinking that it's all done and everything's back to like it used to be for these businesses, because that's not necessarily the case. But kind of through communication with them, finding out how significant the needs are. When we have those 2 prior rounds, it was pure emergency, and now it's more methodical, if that makes sense.
Right, and I think it's somewhat still sector dependent, right? So, you know, the Trysts and the Boulders of the world, they still haven't been able to open up, and it's been a year. So their need is particularly acute. I think with, you know, restaurants as capacity limits are lifted and the opportunity for outdoor seating exists, you know, maybe the need is not quite as strong as it once was. But what we're doing right now, with our you know, second or our third round rather of funding, we're taking in applications between now and April 30th. I think Kat was going to send out a link in the chat box to anyone who's interested. And then it's on our website as well, if you would, you know, direct any businesses that might be interested. You know, in terms of eligibility, you've got to really show that there's a gap in revenue due to COVID, mm-hmm. and that need exists. You fill out the survey, and you can always talk with our office to Liz Murphy, our housing development director, heads up that program. But, you know, I think we will definitely see a need still. It really just will be a little bit more sector dependent and maybe on the individual business itself.
Travis? Now, businesses. Yep. I was just going to ask you.
There's one more thing I wanted to add, and it's of the same theme. There is a brand new fund. Now, it's federal. It's not local. Mm-hmm. The SBA is about to launch a restaurant revitalization fund. This will be national. So obviously, it will be very highly competitive. It's $28.9 billion, but it is all across the country. You can imagine, since restaurants were one of the hardest sectors hit by the pandemic, it is going to be a bit of a frenzy, you know, as far as applicants. But that said, the portal has not yet been made public. So the SBA is kind of putting everyone on notice. And for the first 21 days, when the portal goes live, the SBA will be prioritizing restaurants that are either women-owned, veteran-owned, or minority-owned, just for the first 3 weeks. And then it will open up to everyone. So it's one of those things where some of the technical assistance that we often mention in Newview Communities has been amazing at providing that as businesses have navigated various applications for pandemic support. This is yet another, and Newview is already well aware that there could be some local businesses needing a little guidance to complete that type of SBA Restaurant Revitalization Fund application. So it's super new, hasn't gone live yet, but everyone's paying close attention.
And I know we're going to share that link as well for that SBA link for more information on it. Thomas just shared that with us. We'll be sending that out to you in a moment. And we did share the link for the Fitchburg application. That is in the chat box if you are in need. Now, for businesses who are wondering if they should apply for the Fitchburg assistance, if they've applied in the past for previous rounds, or if they'd have applied for other federal programs, do they still qualify for this assistance in Fitchburg?
It really is dependent on the individual circumstances. Again, the key figure is that there still needs to be a gap between, costs and revenue due to COVID. But, you know, if after receiving PPP funds, after receiving either, you know, first, second round, or maybe both from the city, maybe an additional grant from the Redevelopment Authority, none of that precludes anyone from applying. We welcome any applications, provided that the need still exists. We'd like to support our local businesses.
And now, earlier, I know the mayor and you had mentioned Amazon coming to the area, and I understand that they this has you've met with the planning board. They've been given approval for the old Simons property. So, what's the latest status on Amazon's distribution center coming to Fitchburg?
Mary Jo, you want to take that one?
So the planning board approved the site plan review. It's an industrially zoned parcel. A lot of locals know it well as 135 Intervale Road, or which was the primary building that Simon Saw had been operating in. And so what Amazon's proposal is involves demolition of the existing building, which is we thought it was amazing because it was a big 350,000 square foot building, but the truth was it was functionally obsolete, particularly for a 21st century e-commerce business. So they will be demolishing that building and building a brand new building in its place. That was the site plan that was under review and received successful approval from the planning board. So timeframe wise, it looks like it will be just shy of 2 years out. So that at least, you know, they're going to be doing demolition. That's what we will see first. And then the site work and the preparation. So it could be about a year and a half out, potentially a little bit longer.
I think August was the target date that they had provided. And they still do have some degree of local approval left going in front of the Conservation Commission later in the month.
Now, looking at Intervale Road, I know some people will use it as a cutaway as they're heading into Lunenburg or Leominster, and it is used to some traffic. And as you mentioned, Simons was there, and there were trucks coming in and out for Simons. But when you look at Amazon and the amount of delivery trucks, are we expecting to see a big increase in traffic at the two ends of Intervale Road? And is there are we going to have to do anything to kind of change the traffic patterns or adjust the flow through that area?
Yeah, I'll take it, Mary Jo. Thanks. So there are a couple different considerations being made. One of them is sort of what tweaks might be needed under, you know, the bridge heading up to Summer Street. You know, there were also some questions about maybe providing for an additional mode of access through to Airport Road through, you know, this Redevelopment Authority owned sand pit site. Those, you know, are still both kind of up in the air, and it remains to be seen, you know, whether or not those could come to fruition at least anytime soon. But I know DPW is going to be working with the Amazon team to develop some solutions in the short term. But one of the things that we put as a condition of the approval, you know, we had a traffic study done that set sort of baseline measurements of what traffic volumes we would see. And, you know, we think what came out in the study was, you know, acceptable levels. But the real test will be a year after operation. And this was really built into the conditions where there'll be a supplemental study done to measure the baseline versus how things exist today. And if any major changes are warranted from that subsequent study, we'll be working with the Amazon team to, you know, develop some mitigation strategies.
I do want to bring the mayor into the fold on this as well. When you hear a big name like Amazon wanting to come to Fitchburg, does that help as a selling point for the city for other projects?
Well, of course, it's always, you know, something of a company of that magnitude. Obviously, it's impressive. And the fact that, you know, we had the space that was appropriate for their needs, and they were altering it significantly, obviously. But again, we're looking at, I don't know if Tom mentioned, 200 to 300 jobs. I mean, just huge. And, you know, we're hoping for big things from them. And not to mention, we're going to be utilizing a vacant property yet again to put back on the tax rolls and, again, provide the economic benefits, none the least of which are jobs. So it's a huge win for us. And it's a credit to the staff, city staff that has worked with this company to make that a reality. So thanks go out to all of those folks that have been involved and continue to be involved. The boards and commissions done a great job, and we welcome them to Fitchburg.
And when you mentioned 200 to 300 jobs, I think it's important to note that does, you know, fit in with some of the other things that are happening in Fitchburg, including some market rate housing projects that are in the pipeline as well.
Yeah, a lot of housing going on, particularly on Main Street. I think Tom probably touched on it. There are over $100 million worth of investment going on Main Street from one end to the other. And some of the housing initiatives and projects you're not even seeing yet, but are well underway to become a reality at some point. So it's something that we've been lagging with, but I think you're going to see a quite a boom when it comes to housing.
Right, we've got, you know, the first tangible example, of course, on Blossom Street, Nick Pelletier's development, the townhouse development that, you know, that's been a permitted project for over 10 years. And once Pelletier Properties took it over, we knew we were going to see some action. And we worked with them through the state's HDIP program and a local tax exemption to help make that project happen. We're looking to see the Moran Square development happen right beside the intermodal station. And then, you know, above and beyond that, we've got 350 permitted units of housing developed, or, you know, to be developed in the pipeline. As the mayor alluded to, we've got a lot of exciting things in the future in downtown.
Travis, one thing that is important for the audience to remember is that Fitchburg is uniquely positioned to have transit-oriented development because our commuter rail station, combined with the region's bus hub, is in the downtown. So when you hear of these various housing projects in the downtown, they're not just housing, they're not just downtown housing, they're transit-oriented. And so that is a new type of project that throughout the Commonwealth is hugely focused on. And we're just lucky. We're very, very fortunate that our transit station is downtown.
And I know you mentioned the transit station, but once the bike path comes online as well, that'll work for residents of this new housing that work in Leominster. They'll be able to commute between the two cities using bikes as another form of transportation.
Absolutely.
And we do have another audience question that came in. They're wondering if we could get an update on the status of the arts housing at BF Brown.
Sure. So, you know, the last year, the Fitchburg Arts Community Project has moved through a couple key hurdles at the state level. One of them is that a piece of the property was designated parkland. So we needed to get unanimous votes from our Parks Board and our Conservation Commission, a two-thirds vote from the state legislature to basically free up land that was previously designated parkland to be what we all know as the parking lot beside BF Brown. So that set us back about a year. And of course, the fire before that. But, you know, right now, the Fitchburg Arts Community and, you know, New View's team are in pretty good shape. And they had recently applied for funding. You know, basically how the state process for funding awards works for big housing developments like this. You apply in November, and then you hear shortly thereafter if you're accepted to submit a full application. And then you submit that in like February. So they applied in November, got accepted to the full application, submitted in February, and now it's a bit of a waiting game to hear if the funding will be approved. And if it is, then, you know, they'll, you know, work to close on that project, and probably, you know, we're still a ways out from construction, but at least they'd have all of their entitlements in line. Oftentimes, it might take more than one application to come through successfully. I think we've made a pretty strong case to the state that this is a unique project given all the unpredictable delays we had faced previously. So hopefully we'll be hearing good news in the next few months. We'll see.
And speaking of good news, last night the city council was busy. They did wrap up the 17-month process of updating the city zoning ordinance. Can you tell us about some of the biggest changes with that ordinance that we're going to see that will benefit residents and future projects in the city?
Yeah, the biggest change is I'll have some free time again. now that this 17-month project's done, I can breathe a little bit easier. But, you know, quite seriously, it's been a really Herculean effort by all of our different boards and commissions and the city council and our 30-member advisory team to build out a plan based on our economic development strategic plan. So a lot of the changes that you'll see are really related to enhancing our economic competitiveness. And, you know, we now have a commercial recreation district in the area where, you know, the Great Wolf Lodge site was zoned industrial. We now have that site and the Game on Fitchburg site both zoned commercial recreation with an eye towards the future, looking to kind of both support the existing but also cultivate growth in those industries in those two locations. We had 8 central business districts in our previous zoning. And if you have 8 central business districts throughout the city, they sort of cease to be central, right? And it's not a one size fits all kind of scenario. So we developed kind of bespoke solutions where now we have 8 different districts that some of them are a neighborhood business district, which is more a district within a neighborhood, commercial, which is more kind of the John Fitch, Whalen Street of the world. And then our downtown is actually now designated a downtown business district. It's the only one in the city. So we can really develop solutions tailored towards the dense urban fabric we have there. So our commercial districts, I think, are a little bit more uniquely suited to each individual district. You know, we also have a new district called the Adaptive Industrial District, which is kind of a unique designation with old industrial properties and brownfield sites. And if you own one of those properties, you can either take advantage of the traditional industrial zoning, or you can propose a flexible idea to the planning board through special permit. And so we wanted to open up flexibility at those sites. And then, you know, for homeowners, we look to take on strategies that will incent more housing production as we're sort of lagging in the state. I think last I checked, we are 316th in the Commonwealth in housing production. So we've got some work to do. And, you know, we have made it easier to develop accessory dwelling units in some of our less dense residential neighborhoods, you know, which are sort of additional housing units sort of attached onto a home. And in addition to that, we've improved the regulatory environment for developing housing on smaller lots in our denser residential neighborhoods, like North of Main, like the Cleghorn neighborhood, like the Patch. And, you know, ultimately, we looked at each individual residential district, and I think we tailored some solutions that really will work to incent more production and be more development friendly in those residential areas.
And I do want to get to one last audience question before we wrap things up. And I want to thank everybody who's participated and weighed in our chat box today. They're wondering, can you tell us about the county court building?
Yes. So Mary, you want to take that one? So the Worcester County Court building, you know, it's been vacant for some time, and we actually, during the pandemic, we've been working with DCAM, the state office that, you know, manages all these different state-owned properties. And we worked with Representative Kushmerick and Senator Cronin to file some legislation to actually, you know, enter into a partnership agreement with DCAM where the city will be marketing the project and working with the state to actually market it and hopefully sell it and find a willing buyer to redevelop that site, which is, you know, right in the heart of the TDI district and in the heart of a lot of the work that we've been focusing on. So hopefully we'd see kind of a housing mixed use development take place there. And it's great to have the state's support. It's great to have the support of our local legislators. And, you know, who knows how long that bill will sit at Beacon Hill. It might be a while, but I'd like to think within 6 to 9 months, we might have the opportunity to put that out to a request for a proposal or an RFP.
And for those who are joining us, Mary Jo, do you want to add something?
I just had one more thing to add. Some of the audience may have been paying attention to what went on in Worcester, where they had a courthouse that was converted successfully to housing. And so these types of uses, it's not unusual for a building like that to take on a completely different use. The architecture, both on the outside, but also on the inside, is really unique. And so so that is likely the logical end use. And so the first steps are starting to occur to lead us down that path.
And for those who are joining us today, I do want to thank you for spending your morning with us and for submitting your questions. And just a reminder, you can start your day networking and making connections with other local businesses during the North Central Massachusetts, or in the North Central Massachusetts region, coming up on Friday, April 30th. That's next Friday at 8 a.m. for the virtual Connect North Central. The April speaking sponsor is Rick Medeiros. He's the chief ambassador for the Worcester Red Sox. He is a lot of fun to listen to, and he's going to have a lot of information. So I do urge you to sign up for that by heading to northcentralmass.com. I do want to thank Fitchburg Mayor Stephen DiNatale for joining us, along with the Director of Economic Development, Mary Jo Bohart, Tom Skoroski, the Executive Director of Community Development, and Steve Curry, the City's Health Director. All of you, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing this information with us.
I have a question for you. When are you guys going to open up and we can get together in person?
We'll have to...
I missed the DoubleTree little breakfast event.
I do miss the breakfast.
Yeah, not just the food, but I mean, you know, the fellowship and whatnot. But
I think we all miss them, and we are being.
I'll ask the boss about that. I'm going to ask him that question. Let's open it up. Roy,
I think he's going to tell you that we're remaining cautiously optimistic that we will hopefully be able to have some in-person gatherings later on this year.
Close, Trav, by saying, any success that the city or I enjoy is due to the fact that I hire smart people, all right? Like Mr. Skoroski, he speaks properly, he's from Wisconsin, and Mary Jo Bohart is from the left coast, so you know they painfully pronounce their I's. And then I've got COVID Curry, who knows all about what's going on in that world, and that's the reason why we're as successful as we have been and will be in the future. Thanks to all you guys.
Thanks, Mayor.
Absolutely.
Tell Roy to open it up. Let's go.
I'll let him know. Thank you for being here.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inside North Central Massachusetts. This podcast is produced by the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce. For more information on this episode, links to other episodes on Podbean, or if you have any questions, please visit northcentralmass.com.